Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You are listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Jaga. This week is Radio K's Spring Pledge Drive, and our theme is Love the Local. We are bringing you stories about lots of local things, including an interview with Dessa. If you love what Radio K does, then make sure you head over to our website and donate to keep the good times rolling. But in the meantime, let's jump into this episode, which begins right now. In honor of Pledge Week, our producer Alex Schumacher went around the station to ask people what they love about Radio K.
My favorite thing about Radio K is the in-studios we have. Always have a lot of cool bands, local bands you haven't heard of, as well as touring bands that have come through. And just as volunteering here and working here, I've gotten to meet a lot of really cool musicians coming through Radio K and performing in our studio, and gotten to meet some of the bands I've listened to for a really long time. And it's just been a really great experience that Radio K has provided for me. And then they air that music live on air, which not a lot of stations do, especially for the really local bands we feature.
What I like about Radio K is the fact that we support so many local bands that I would never have heard of. Not only because I'm from Chicago and like don't know anything about Minneapolis, like street names, but also like a lot of local bands you don't hear on like regular big time radio, because it's like, gay witch abortion. Would our viewers enjoy that? And it's like, yes, sir, here at Radio K, we play anything and everything. And I also like going back into like the closets and seeing all the CDs that you think you know, and then just playing them and seeing who else likes them.
What I love about Radio K, I could probably go on and on for sure, but I'll just pick out a few. Definitely, at least personally, the exposure to local music has been amazing. I mean, I already grew up in a really music central household, but even being able to be here and DJ and then learn about all these cool bands and all these cool local shows has been really, really fun.
If I wasn't a staff member at Radio K, I don't think I would have nearly the amount of knowledge about music and anything related to that as I do now. There's a wealth of opportunity at the station to not only get a glimpse of what is going on right now in today's music climate, but also what was going on in the music climate of years past. There's an incredible amount of history within Radio K's library that I think is something to honestly be treasured.
And so if you want to keep supporting local music in studios and all the other amazing things Radio K does that not only we here at the K love, but I know you also love, then swing by RadioK.org and hit the blue donate button and throw a little money our way. And from Real College Podcast, I'm Alex Schumacher.
Being a fan of local music, especially here in Minneapolis, is a really cool experience. You get to witness firsthand how an artist grows and changes during their career, and I find that artists here in Minnesota are super nice to their fans and really sort of become friends with them. Anyone who knows me will know that I am a huge fan of Dessa. I first saw her at Rock the Garden in 2014, and ever since then, I've been keeping up on her music and her writing. I got to sit down with her right before Chime came out, which is out now. Go take a listen to it. It's super great. But this album is a little bit different from albums before.
I mean, writing is always a pretty solitary endeavor. You know, it's not something that you do with your tag team, usually. You know, it happens when you're alone. But yeah, sharing work when it was more malleable and then readjusting our course, you know, making course corrections as we went, was a little bit different. I think I was more flexible on this record. And also, I think I was trying less hard to impress with intellect. Like, you know, you're always aware of how you present, you know. We're aware of how our bodies look to other people, of how our voices sound, of the way we speak. And we're all kind of monitoring how that's being received. And I think on this record, I was trying to figure out how to communicate a little bit less, like, with less thought towards reception, and less, I had less to prove and more to say, I think. There's a song called Ride, which is the first song on the record, that I remember thinking, ooh, do I feel comfortable putting this out?
Baby, put that out. I don't let nobody smoke in here. You sounded woke on the telephone, but faded you don't say much.
You know, it doesn't have a lot of fancy words in it. It talks more frankly about, like, a kind of dystopian perception of political current events. It talks more frankly about, like, a it hints at a dissatisfying, like, hookup. And, and saying, I'm going to roll with that. That's also part of my true lived experience.
Another thing that has influenced this album is an experiment that Dessa underwent. I'm not great at explaining it, so I'll just let her do the explaining.
Yeah, so as part of my performance with the Minnesota Orchestra, I knew that I wanted to have, like, a narrative run through the night that would sort of, like, serve as a scaffolding for each of the songs to sit on. And I was also going through, like, a breakup that took, like, 10 years to stick. And so after feeling pretty blue, like, as a person offstage, I contacted a team of neuroscientists to see if I could locate the region in my brain in which romantic love resides. And to do that, I was referencing a lot of published material, so pay my respects here to Dr. Helen Fisher. But I was lucky enough to be taken on by scientists at the University of Minnesota, led by a team of scientists led by a woman named Dr. Cheryl Ullman, and this neurofeedback clinician. So that's the person who would, like, stick electrodes to your head to measure your brain waves and maybe try to change them. And her name was Penny Jean Grace Fire. And, yeah, over the course of several months, we tried this kind of case study where we measured the love in my brain. We did an experimental intervention to try to change the way that my brain waves behaved. And then we re-measured the love in my brain to see if it did anything.
And in the end, the experiment worked. Her feelings were different. That led me to wonder if the music that I loved from Dessa was going to change drastically now that she wasn't in heartbreak, which is such an awful thing of me to be concerned about because she was heartbroken. But I couldn't help but ask.
It's not the case that all of a sudden, like, I'm a disco dance act, you know what I mean, after having had a really melancholy discography. But I think I've always been interested in sort of a blending of feelings. And I was initially attracted to Doomtree because I thought that there was these moments of beauty. I mean, the way that Cecil Otter, for example, handles strings and orchestral samples, like, gorgeous. But there was also these moments of, like, aggression and unchecked anger. And my favorite stuff always, I think, has both of those things. There's an anger and there's a beauty. And so now, after having done this case study on my own brain, I think a lot of that experience finds its way into the music, even just in asking the questions that I was asking during that experiment. Like, can you decide to love somebody? I don't know. In the same way, like, I'm at the doctor and they hit my knee with the little mallet, I don't decide to kick my leg. That's just reflex. I can't help but react that way. Is that how love works? Like, is it a choice? So, like, on the record, there's a song about free will. And in part, you know, I think that's a product of my rumination during that time. Yeah. And there's one, like, straight-up unapologetic summertime pop song. So.
Chime is out now. You can listen to it on Spotify, Apple Music, all the places. You can buy it at doomtree.net. Thank you so much to Dessa for sitting down with me. I talked to her for a full 40 minutes, so we can probably publish the full interview if that's something anybody's interested in. The song playing right now is Velodrome. That is the song that Vesa was saying is about free will, and it is one of my personal favorites off the album.
My will's quite free. I'm half machine, at least half steam. Aquinas call on me. How many angels on the head of your pin? Anybody in stilettos can answer that old thing. It's one for the right foot, one for the left.
If you frequently walk across the Washington Avenue Bridge on the U of M campus, then chances are you've seen a guy with a free bad advice sign or free apologies. He's become a sort of staple around campus. Our reporter Vishnu talked to him to learn more about why he does what he does.
If you've been around the University of Minnesota campus in the past 4 years or so, there's a decent chance that while walking on a street corner, minding your own business, you've run into a smiley, lanky man with glasses, maybe a rainbow zebra print tights, and a large sign with the words, "Free Hugs," printed on it. Well, sometimes it says free shrugs, and other times it says free advice, but no matter what he is soliciting, the interaction is unique, strange, and all around memorable. Ever since I saw him my freshman year, I've always been curious about him. What makes the free hugs guy so enthusiastically and sincerely break social norms and risk embarrassment, especially in the cold, cold north? Well, let's find out. Let's dive into the unique, wild, and cartoony world of Misha Estrin, a.k.a. the free hugs guy of Minneapolis. I met him on a Saturday afternoon at the Kitty Cat Club in Dinkytown. The place was empty, save for a random dude chilling at the bar, and the blaring sound of music, which I didn't really think about when I was doing the interview. Rookie mistake, so there's going to be some random music playing in the background, and maybe some jarring cuts, so, enjoy that. I'm a student.
I decided free hugs. Here, let me move up.
Yep.
Maybe you move up.
I move it here. I'll just move here. I'll sit over here.
No, I like you in front of me, but I want this chair to come closer to me. I hope this is all in the interview of this logistical.
Here we go. No, this is okay. It's hard.
Okay. I decided to do free hugs because I was really depressed and I felt like I was missing social connection to people and physical connection. I felt really physically like I didn't have anyone in my life, really. Yeah. And so I was really inspired by this video. It had this cool music playing and everyone was so happy to hug this guy. I was like, I want to make people that happy. I want people to be that connected. And so I made a sign, I printed it out, and I walked down the street. I was really sad, actually. I didn't look happy. I don't know why anyone hugged me, but every single person hugged me. Every single person hugged me.
Really?
It was so energized. It was like, oh, free hugs, it's so cool.
Yeah.
And it was inspirational.
Yeah.
It made me realize, oh, this is something people want. And then I realized it was actually like homecoming or something, so people were just drunk and they were up for anything.
What?
I think the biggest thing that holds people back from connection is a fear of rejection, is a fear of like, ooh, nobody wants this, nobody wants me. It's a feeling of I don't feel valuable enough, I don't like myself enough in this moment, I'm not content with who I am for other people to see that beauty in me. And my goal is to help people see the beauty within themselves. I want everybody to be reminded that they're valued and appreciated and spontaneous. And I want people to realize the true potential that they really have.
But, so, kind of, when did you start doing stand-up? What kind of drew you to that?
What drew me to stand-up comedy is I wanted attention. I wanted a podium to have everyone's attention. Like, imagine you walk into a room and there's 300 people in this room that all want to hear what you have to say.
Right.
Not just want to hear what you have to say, but they're not going to interrupt you unless it's to laugh or clap at what you have to say. They're all cheering for you and giving you this unlimited space to create. In my whole life, I felt suppressed. I felt like people didn't fully appreciate me. People didn't give me the time to speak or to, you know. And here's a podium where everyone's paying attention and is there to laugh.
Right.
It's like, I feel like that's the one space where I could get what I was craving.
And what do your parents do?
They tell me about how my life choices are great and how they support me. Ask me about more stuff about me and not them.
Okay.
I'm working on building communities. That's my biggest thing right now, is I want to create the most spaces for people to connect, because I think connection is what I was missing my entire life. Connection is what made me feel alone. It made me feel depressed. It made me feel like I wasn't worth anything. I was like super, I'm at a point in my life where I feel so happy and so connected to everybody.
Uh-huh.
And I want everybody to have that. And so I host a ton of events.
Yeah. Would you like to plug some events that people might want to go to?
Sure. I'm hosting on March 28th at Honey a speed defriending event. So it's like you bring friends that you don't want to be friends with anymore. You have 5 minutes to tell them why you guys are breaking up, and then they get to meet other people and kind of replace you.
Do you feel like you're trapped in a bit?
Sometimes I feel like I'm trapped in. I'm never trapped in a bit, because trapped would imply that I'm stuck and can't get out, and I am out. And that's the thing. I feel like my whole life I've been trapped in a reality. I've been trapped in a normalized existence. And to free yourself is to be in a bit. Ooh. Oh, that was smart.
Every coffee shop has their regulars, but the regulars at Espresso Royale took it to a new level. Here's reporter Austin Maclis, who talked to some of the people who frequented the former Dinky Town favorite.
A lot of people have their favorite coffee spot, that place they go every time. Maybe it's because of the warm atmosphere, or they know the crowd, or maybe it's more economical, like the drinks are cheap. Espresso Royale had it all. It was this little coffee shop in the heart of Dinky Town, right outside the University of Minnesota campus. It was down-to-earth, inclusive, and a little raggedy. Most of the tables would wobble back and forth. It had a true bohemian flair. So whenever I needed to write or do homework, that's where I went. It was my place. And a lot of other people felt the same way.
I'm Holly Wilson. I am a journalism major studying strategic communications at the University of Minnesota.
Holly, like a lot of other U of M students, frequented the shop. Many people considered Espresso Royale a second home. But Holly took it to the next level, creating a group dedicated to Espresso Royale's student regulars.
I am the founder of the Sisterhood of the Dinky Town Espresso Royale.
She started the Sisterhood last summer when her friend Jordan was studying abroad.
I was really, really bored one day in July. And I was missing Jordan, who was studying abroad in Russia, because me and Jordan would always hang out. We would always run into each other at Espresso Royale, and then I realized I run into everyone at Espresso Royale. And so I made a Facebook group, and I added people that I knew frequented the business some acquaintances, some more friends, and it started from there.
The sisterhood quickly grew. It now includes over 30 members.
First, it started as friends and then friends of friends, and now there's like acquaintances and just anyone that's ever like expressed in person an interest in it.
Yeah, it was just a fun little way for us to like bond over this coffee shop we all loved and were always at.
Brian Rosas, a junior at the U, was also a member of the sisterhood.
The more we went, the more at home we were feeling. We got to know the baristas, we knew the drinks, we knew like the deals of the day. So I kind of just, I don't know, I felt like home.
For Brian, the shop provided way more than just coffee.
It was very, I don't know, it felt like a safe space for us. There was a lot of visibility with queer students as well, which made a lot large part of the, I guess, quote unquote, sisterhood.
Holly explained that the sisterhood was created for people to come together.
They are people that have become closer friends because of Espresso Royale.
And it was all centered on this little coffee shop, despite its limitations.
Their coffee wasn't particularly great. It wasn't the product. I think it was the, like, just people wanting to spend time in a place together.
The physical space of the shop might have had something to do with it. Espresso Royale had a great big window on the front. It provided a full view of the Dinkytown streets. People walking by could see who was on the inside and vice versa. Plus, Holly notes it was close to campus. She remembers walking home most days from class and peering into the window just to see who was in. Usually, she ended up staying.
I never knew who I was going to walk into in Espresso Royale.
For many members of the sisterhood, this was a daily ritual.
So at least like 15 of us would go there daily. We'd see each other a lot. I think just seeing that we knew a lot of people there, we just all just started coming together all the time.
They weren't the only ones.
My name's John Brainerd, and I've lived in Marcy Homes for about 30 years.
Espresso Royale had been around since the early 80s, and it had a lot of regulars, some of whom had been coming for just as long. John explained to me that he'd been going to Espresso Royale
since it opened, which I think is about 30 years.
Safe to say, he's seen a lot of its history.
It used to be another coffee house before then. It used to be open till 2 o'clock. And then Espresso Royale took over that coffee house that was in the same location.
Espresso Royale became an integral part of the community for generations of students.
It's where older folks, younger folks, all that would be one of the meeting places. There's some retired professors would hang out there. And it's just, yeah, it's just sort of a central part of the university culture.
But sadly, Espresso Royale saw its run end last December after management said they couldn't compete with other stores. For many of the regulars, including Brian, it was a heartbreaking decision.
Well, yeah, we were obviously sad. We were like, where are we going to go now? We just couldn't like think of any other places to go that we felt as comfortable at home. So yeah, we just kind of felt a little lost. We're like, well, and it was so sudden. We're like, well, what's going to happen? What are we going to do? Where are we going to go?
John was also disappointed, especially because of the way it went down.
Kind of inevitable. Everything closes. But the fact they didn't have a goodbye party and very little notice to the employees and nobody knows what's going on. So it's kind of odd the way it closed.
It's part of a larger change that's happening to Dinkytown, as well as other neighborhoods around the U. National chains, new construction, and higher rent are pushing out local favorites. In the past few months alone, several Dinkytown spots have called it quits. Vecchio's, the family-owned Italian restaurant that's been in business for the past 60 years, announced it was closing this March. For the sisterhood, Espresso Royale was not just another part of the community. It was the community.
Now we're all, like, realizing that. We're like, oh, shit. We don't have anywhere, like, we don't have a common meeting place anymore. And we usually didn't, like, we never made plans because we would always just see each other at Espresso Royale.
Unfortunately, they haven't yet found a replacement.
Nothing can fill the void, I don't think. So I don't think we've found a successor for Espresso Royale yet. It just never feels right.
Maybe it didn't look like it from the outside or the inside, But Espresso Royale was special. This one little coffee shop in one part of Dinkytown brought so many people together. That's what Holly remembers the most, the people.
What I miss most about Espresso Royale is being able to just walk down 14th and peer in the window and see my friends.
For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Austin Makulis.
Radio K is supported by a number of different organizations, including the University of Minnesota's College of Continuing and Professional Studies. This college serves non-traditional students wishing to further their education, whether that's non-traditional as in they need night classes due to a day job, or non-traditional because they're interested in a more applied program or distance learning courses. In 2013, CCAP celebrated its centennial and took a look back at their history, and with that, some of Radio K's history, too. Here's reporter Emily Allen, who met with College Dean Mary Nichols to go over some of that history.
Okay, gotcha. Well, let me give you my name. It's Mary Nichols. I'm the Dean of the College of Continuing and Professional Studies.
Before Mary Nichols was a Dean of the College of Continuing and Professional Studies, or CCAPS, she was working at a different college at the U.
I started here as an assistant professor in the School of Business, so I'm a faculty member in the Carlson School of Management.
She taught at Carlson for a number of years, and then she moved on to be the associate dean there. Mary knew about CCAPS because they offered a couple of night classes through Carlson. And later on, when they were making some changes to their programs, she got to help out.
They were repositioning themselves. They were doing a strategic plan. And so I got involved from that standpoint as kind of an internal guide with them in doing their strategic planning.
And when the College of Continuing and Professional Studies was looking for a new dean in 2001,
I applied and I was delighted to get the job. It's been a great run since then.
You could say a lot has happened to the college in the last 17 years. A new dean, a new location, they moved to St. Paul, new degree programs, and even a new name. Up until last year, they were called the College of Continuing Education. But the college's history actually stretches back much farther than the early 2000s, as Mary found out during their centennial celebration in 2013.
We learned a lot about what really is a very rich history of reaching out to people who are seeking to learn from the university, who didn't have necessarily the ability to be entering freshmen and taking a traditional course of study.
In 1913, University President George Edgar Vincent oversaw the General Extension Division, which provided working adults access to university classes. This was kind of the first documented idea of a non-traditional college experience at the University of Minnesota. In 1930, this program became an actual school, the University College. The Board of Regents approved the idea after a committee's recommendation for the president of the time, Lotus Kaufman, to create a new service for this new kind of student. The University College graduated its first class in 1931. Only 20 out of 150 applicants were accepted for the program, according to university historian James Gray.
What is interesting to me is that this was being done on behalf of the university, and the university itself was quite visionary, and it was through this college that they carried out that vision. So it's not so much the accomplishments of the college itself, but the vision was really the university's vision, and we were the means for carrying out that vision. So that was very rewarding to see. And that carried on all through history.
One of the university's cooler visions that helped to continue education actually involves some Radio K history.
In the 30s and 40s, where radio was becoming a much more powerful force in our world, we had radio courses via radio. And in the 1950s, public schools closed down because of a polio epidemic, and the university began broadcasting courses over radio, over our radio.
That program was called Minnesota School of the Air, and it continued even after the epidemic ended, broadcasting shows for elementary school children.
And so those are some of the roots, actually, of Radio K, too, delivering courses to people, to students who were staying at home because of a health epidemic that was going on around them. As we move on into then the 50s and the 60s, our society began to change about how we see women in professions and women in education, and it's a great desire to provide educational opportunities for women.
The Minnesota Plan for the Continuing Education of Women was another big university vision achieved through CCAPS. Launched in 1960, it gave women who had been away from school for a while the chance to return and continue their education. Mary says the Minnesota Plan set an example for other educational institutions at the time, and it existed until the stigma against women returning to school subsided. The Minnesota Plan benefited many women who continue to serve and represent the university today.
One of our regents right now is Linda Cohen, and Linda Cohen, Regent Cohen, Regent Cohen, I want to emphasize that, Regent Cohen, was active in our Continuing Education for Women program. So we have some, you know, there are many, many people that were able to get what they, learn what they wanted to be able to learn and be very successful either in business or in continuing to contribute to society, as certainly Regent Cohen would be a great example of that.
Today, there's no more Minnesota School of the Air, just Radio K. Although CCAPS does have a couple lecturers come on to the morning show to talk about cool new research and projects. And though there's no more Minnesota Plan, there are all sorts of resources to help students looking to further their education or professional skills.
As we look ahead, it turns out that non-traditional students are now the majority of learners. There's never been a time, I think, when fields are changing faster, when knowledge is accumulating faster, and people need to keep up with what is going on.
CCAPS offers an array of different undergraduate and master's level programs in applied and interdisciplinary fields. For more information on the College of Continuing and Professional Studies, their website is ccaps.umn.edu. We'd also like to attribute some of the information in this episode to the CCE Current magazine, which was released in spring 2012 before the CCAP centennial. For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Emily Allen.
That is all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you love what Radio K does, head over to RadioK.org and hit the big blue donate button. It really helps us out. Every penny counts, and we appreciate it. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. We are produced by Liv Riggins and Alex Schumacher. I'm your host and managing editor, Jacob Maldonado Medina. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in every Monday for more arts and cultural coverage.